Did you know most people are visual learners? That's why visual aids are critical during genetic counseling appointments. As we explore in this show, genetic concepts can be really complex to understand, which is why the Greenwood Genetic Center created Genic Counseling Aids. And now their seventh edition is available, including an app for iPads. In telehealth appointments, it can be incredibly helpful to share your screen with these visual aids from Greenwood. So head over to ggc.org/publications to download this vital tool for your daily practice. I receive a lot of emails from listeners interested in genetic careers, and I love connecting and providing resources. One of those is Keck Graduate Institute's genetics programs in Southern California. KGI offers a master's degree in genetic counseling, as many of you know, but for those of you looking for something slightly different, KGI also has a first-of-its-kind graduate program in genomic data analytics. This two-year master's program gives students the opportunity to work side-by-side with applied life scientists and future genetic counselors while gaining hands-on experience with technology and information that are revolutionizing the future of medicine. Learn more about the program by visiting kgi.edu/DNA today. Again, that's kgi.edu/DNA today.
How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, they're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hello, you're listening or watching to DNA Today. It's a genetics podcast show and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Deneen. I'm also a certified genetic counselor practicing in the prenatal space. And today my guest is a fellow genetic counselor, Elizabeth Turner. She's the co-founder and chief executive officer of Advanced Telegenetic Counseling, or ATGC, which is their cute acronym. Elizabeth's team is one of the first telegenetic counseling companies to enter the industry, and her team provides comprehensive genetic counseling services via telemedicine. Elizabeth has practiced in areas of oncology, pediatrics, reproductive health, and general genetics, and she holds a certification from the American Board of Genetic Counseling. It is a pleasure to be back pseudo on the air with you, Elizabeth. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, Kira, for having me. It's always fun to get to talk together, and I can't wait to see what comes of this talk today.
Yeah, definitely. We recorded at the beginning of the pandemic for the Phenotype Speaker Series. So if people want to hear more from us and, you know, our kind of our first interview there, you can check that out. And that's also a video component. So we were just saying that we're getting used to this whole video component because I'm so used to the audio podcast side. So I want to get listeners and viewers familiar with ATGC, and I figured a good way to do that is just hearing why you started ATGC and what that original foundation looked like.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for the question. So I started ATGC just sort of based out of personal experience. I'm from a rural area of the Midwest originally, and saw firsthand that the areas outside of major metropolitan areas at the time had a large deficit of genetic counselors, which as genetic counselors we know still holds true today, though there are more of us serving a broader area, I think, since about, you know, I guess a decade ago at this point. But the core issues still exist, and that is that people lack access to genetic counselors for all sorts of reasons. Some of those are what we might think of as typical reasons, like geographic barriers, so isolation from major medical centers, or a difficult commute to get there. But it also extends to people who live in urban areas who may have a long wait time. Because what we're finding is that though some genetics clinics are, you know, operating efficiently with a 1 or 2 week turnaround, there are still areas of the country that are experiencing wait times of months. And so we can help sort of offset some of that overflow or act as a primary source of genetics referral for patients and their providers.
And wait times can be very long, even if you do have a genetic counselor in the area, and certainly, you know, an impact that's been having, especially with the pandemic. I mean, how have you seen telehealth change with the pandemic? You've been in this for a while, but now everybody else is kind of joining in and trying to figure it out.
Yeah, it's been an interesting road. I would say that in 2016, when ATGC was founded, though telehealth genetic counseling existed, certainly, it was not a typical way in which genetic counselors were practicing on a daily basis. And I would say it really was a shift last year that that understanding from the larger medical community seem to come into play. And I think that's because other areas of medicine were experiencing telehealth. So physicians are already switching their practices to a more telehealth-based model. And so I think the connection was a little easier to make at that point between how genetic counseling could be efficient, not only in person, but through a remote connection as well.
And with this, are you meeting with patients like through video chatting? Is it phone? Like, how does that actually look for patients?
It's a really important question and one that we want to make sure that we get right, because there are regulations that differ state by state for what is an appropriate way to connect with a patient. So there's a lot of learning to be done there. And that's just dependent on a state in which a genetic counselor is licensed. Or potentially not licensed if it's a state that doesn't require licensure. So there are considerations there. For the most part, ATGC always wants to connect with patients in both an audio and visual format. That's sort of the ideal for us. But we do interact with patient groups that have, for various reasons, lack of access to video connection. A lot of these are due to vast geographic distance where there is still not reliable internet connection. So in those sorts of cases, we certainly make amends to see patients because for those patients, it's often a matter of having a genetic appointment or not having a genetic counseling appointment at all.
And so in those cases, you bring up a good point of just how telehealth is addressing areas of disparity within the, you know, genetics community and just who can have access to genetic counseling. What other aspects of this is telehealth helping with in terms of addressing these disparities?
I think that the way that telehealth is help genetic counseling through telehealth is helping is by really leveling the playing field for access to these services. I mean, I think that's sort of the paramount takeaway from all of this, is that, you know, it's our goal to provide genetic counseling as much like a traditional in-person appointment as one would expect. And so to be able to open that up to patients who otherwise would not have access to that type of service, or to open up a source for a provider who may not have had access to a genetic counselor locally to which they'd like to refer their patients, has been a really nice thing that, and an important part of what ATGC offers and hopefully will continue to offer far into the future.
And another aspect of just, you know, as I learn about ATGC, is that you also offer genetic counseling, not just in English, but other languages. What are some of the languages that you offer for patients to connect in?
Yeah. So we believe it's very important for a patient to connect in the language in which they're most comfortable communicating. So we do have genetic counselors on staff who are fluent in languages that, such as Spanish, that we frequently get referral requests for that language. We have genetic counselors on staff who speak a variety of other languages, including Portuguese and Hindi. And for all other patients who need any type of translation, we do offer complimentary medical language translation with a third-party interpreter if our genetic counselors don't feel comfortable supporting that language on their own.
And that's amazing that just the genetic counselors that you do have a part of the team do speak other languages, because, you know, from what I'm hearing, and we had an episode about using interpreters in genetics back in December of 2020, and it's just such an important aspect to be able to talk to someone, you know, in their language if you can, and just like eliminate a lot of those barriers. And I'm sure that patients just really appreciate having that connection and being able to really, you know, some of these topics are really tough to explain. So if you're hearing it through a language that's not your primary language, that you're not comfortable in, I mean, it's hard enough as it is. So to add that to it certainly makes it more difficult.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And another important point that I remember hearing was that, you know, an interpreter may be able to speak, you know, another language fluently, but there is also this medical terminology aspect of translation. And especially when we get into the nuances of genetics, it's so important to have, and this, I think this goes for any genetic counselor that's working with an interpreter, make sure that it's someone who is trained to translate those medical terms as well. Because genetics is difficult enough to understand, you know, in our native tongue. So I can't imagine the challenges of not having the words to effectively convey, you know, sort of what we are hoping to get across to the patient, the provider.
Yeah, and certainly with, you know, just misconceptions and things that people are bringing into a session with them that you have to dismantle to some degree and then build back up their education there. And just, you know, some terms in English maybe don't translate very well in other languages and vice versa. So there's certainly a lot of hurdles there. So it's great that people can have that. And then also you're talking about like the video aspect that really helps with communication of, you know, I feel like, you know, as I meet with patients in person, having the mask on, it's like sometimes getting someone's name, like, oh, is it Brian, Ryan? Like, it's hard that you don't see, you know, people's lips anymore and like some of that body language. And with telehealth, you're almost able to get more of that than in person, which is like such a mind twist.
Kira, I had not even considered that point, but you're right. So you're doing a lot of in-person work, it sounds like, and I'm sure that the mask is an added challenge to reading those nonverbal cues that genetic counselors are trained to read and sort of react to. I think that at this point in history, at least, that is maybe an additional small benefit of telehealth.
Yeah. I'm like waiting for the day where I can finally see someone's face. And even just, you know, the parts where you just smile about something, like, you know, you try to do the eye smile and you're like, can you see I'm eye smiling at you? And, you know, it certainly gets difficult in just trying to connect with people. So it's a bit of a twist that sometimes like a telehealth setting can be more intimate and better communication in that sense. One of the aspects, and I've only done a couple telehealth sessions, but a couple of like the problems that I've had during it is just the distractions at home. I mean, how is this something that you process? I'm working in the prenatal space, so often there's other kids in the background or their partners, you know, trying to pay attention, but they're also helping with the children or something's going on. Is there ways that you combat this? Is there anything that you kind of say to patients ahead of time, like, okay, this is what you should expect during the session, this is what you should be doing, not doing?
Yeah, we certainly encourage patients to schedule their appointments at times in which they can fully focus on that appointment, not when they're involved in multiple other activities, but really to give that dedicated focus like they would for an in-person medical appointment. I will say that having availability throughout the week and at sort of off hours than typical business hours has been a benefit for that, especially, for example, for parents who may have young children at home and need to wait till later in the evening, or someone who has a full-time job. So I think there are ways in which we can encourage patients to sort of schedule, based around their availability, that sort of helps counteract some of that. It's a good point.
Yeah. Just having that like set ahead of time. Maybe I should come up with like, okay, here's the do's and don'ts of doing telehealth with patients and everything.
Yeah, for sure.
So ATGC has, you know, such a wide range of specialties that you cover in genetics. I mean, you know, I was saying at the top of the show that you personally have experience in cancer, pediatrics, reproductive health, and general genetics. You have other team members as well. What areas does ATGC cover in terms of like genetic counseling indications?
That's a great question. So I think we've been really lucky to have just a wonderful genetic counseling team. At ATGC, we have some genetic counselors that specialize only in certain areas. For example, we have one genetic counselor on staff who's been a reproductive genetic counselor for over 20 years, and that is her sole area of focus. But we have other genetic counselors on staff who have been lucky enough to have the training in other areas such as neurogenetics, cardiology, oncology, pediatrics, that can help support a wide range of indications. And we hope to continue to support as many people as we can going forward into the future to really provide that comprehensive genetic counseling for anyone who needs it.
Yeah, because certainly a line that I feel like I say so much on the show, but is so true, that genetic counselors are becoming active and engaged in every area of healthcare. And I think that just goes, you know, to your point that you're saying, that, you know, all these areas, I mean, cardiac and, you know, neuro are such, used to be very, very like, oh, that is such a niche in genetic counseling. And it's becoming more part of the, oh, this is one of the fields in genetic counseling. So it's exciting to hear that those are areas that someone can go to ATGC and say, okay, like I have a family history of, say, you know, a condition that maybe that they're thinking about could be running in the family and being inherited, such as like a cardiac condition, and seeing, you know, doing testing with that. For people that, you know, most people, if they're listening to the show, have probably, you know of genetic counseling and, you know, what we do as genetic counselors, but for people that may not be as familiar, what can they expect when they're doing a session with ATGC? What, like, how long is the session, and what are some of the information that they should prepare going into it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So an initial consult is blocked for 1 hour of time. The genetic counselor is going to request some information ahead of time from the patient. That may or may not include family history information ahead of time. This is often dependent on the genetic counselor and the specific indication. At times, they like to try to collect it during the appointment. Sometimes we try to collect it ahead of time. So I will say that ATGC has a very individualized approach where the genetic counselor is reviewing the from the time a referral comes in, a genetic counselor is in charge of that case and reviewing whatever information we have from the patient. I will say that for physicians and patients who are interested in an appointment with ATGC, one of the most important things for us is to get good patient records ahead of time. You know, there's a lot that we can glean from clinical records as genetic counselors. In fact, I think it's one of the most important tools that we have, especially in areas like oncology, where there can be so much that can be seen in previous workups from patients, but also in other areas of genetics as well. For example, if there's been previous testing in the family for another indication, or just clinical labs or something that may help support whatever indication is at hand. So, you know, it's very important, I think, before anyone gets a genetic counseling appointment to have those notes sent in so the genetic counselor has time to review them, to provide the family history intake if it's requested ahead of time, and just to make sure that the patient is aware of sort of how genetic counseling works, which is typically that we have an initial appointment, and if there's a necessary follow-up, that will be taking place as a secondary appointment. After that secondary appointment, the clinic notes are sent to the referring physician, and are available for the patient as well. And it's our hope that in staying in touch with the patient's physician, and having access to those clinic notes will help support the patient's continuity of care for any recommended follow-up that the physician might see appropriate after that point.
And part of follow-up of a genetic counseling appointment, like when I meet with patients in person, you know, a good chunk of them end up saying, okay, I want to do genetic testing. So how does that work in the telehealth space? I mean, you're meeting with patients, they could be, you know, anywhere in the US. So how do you then coordinate having them give a sample for DNA testing?
That's a great question. So for our more organizational partners, they generally have a protocol in place that they prefer, whether that is for the patient to come into a local clinic for phlebotomy. If not, we, you know, frequently order testing that can be performed with a remote collection, whether that's saliva sample sent to the patient, saliva kit sent to the patient's house for a saliva sample, or, you know, a mobile phlebotomy service for a blood draw. Of course, that's not the case for every patient. And in those instances where we still need some local support, our genetic counselors do help coordinate that just case-by-case basis on what's appropriate for that patient, what resources they have locally, and or whatever, you know, test they're considering for that individual.
Yeah, certainly saliva kits, I think, feel like has been a game changer, because you can send that to someone's house and then, you know, you kind of just explain to them, don't eat or drink half an hour before you do it, and that bubbles don't count in terms of filling up to that line. I feel like those are always the two things that I'm saying to patients if they...
Count. Yeah.
Bubbles don't count. I don't know if that makes sense to anyone. When you're giving a spit sample, a lot of them end up being bubbles. And people are like, oh, I reached the line. I'm like, nope, keep going there.
I feel like it'd be a genetic counseling meme or whatever it's called.
Bubbles don't count. Think before bubbles you spit. There's so many spit things, right?
Yeah. I will say, though, that the majority of our patients are coming to us from a provider who's referring them. So in the vast majority of cases, there is some sort of local resource in place for that patient. I think the only challenge comes when we have patients who are self-referring. As you said, hey, I have this family history, sort of what do I do next? And we always do prefer to involve a local clinician regardless, just because, you know, we feel like that's what's best for the patient.
And another aspect of telehealth that's been, you know, impacting the genetic counseling community, especially on the education side in grad school, is rotations. A lot of students have not been able to go to in-person rotations, or they've been really limited. Do you have any interns at the moment? And like, how do you end up setting up an internship that's all telehealth? What does that look like?
So we have a really wonderful director of clinical genetics who helps manage our clinical team and also interfaces with 5 genetic counseling programs with which we routinely see students. So those 5 programs refer, I'm sorry, not refer, those 5 programs send to ATGC students on a yearly basis that are interested in doing a telehealth rotation. That became really important, especially during 2020, because as you mentioned, there were students who just didn't have that experience that so many of us going through the programs have had with you know, really in-depth clinical work because things were shut down. And so we've been able to help support them or to continue to support those programs during this time. And so I think that it's a really, hopefully, a valuable tool for students to be able to see that, especially now, there are so many opportunities for genetic counselors in whatever area they want to specialize in, if that's telehealth, in-person counseling, being a laboratory genetic counselor. I mean, sort of the sky's the limit, I think. And, you know, our field is in such, I think, still part of its infancy that it's going to be really fun to see how we develop, how we grow, and how I think questions get answered as we move along and really define ourselves as genetic counselors, you know, like, because we are not the first generation, but, you know, genetic counseling is a young field. And a lot of the genetic counselors who are there at the forefront are still practicing today. So I think we're at this really awesome place where we can sort of look back and see how much we've grown over the years, but also have the opportunity to say, okay, how do we want to move forward from here? What is the genetic counselor's role in healthcare and sort of what do we want to see going forward?
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting idea that, you know, I don't think I've really explored on the show that most of the genetic counselors that started the field are still practicing. And that really gives you a perspective of, like, we don't have people that are like, oh, a retired genetic counselor. I very rarely hear that because they're still working to some capacity, whether that becomes, you know, they're a professor somewhere, they're doing a little bit of consulting. So I think that just, like, really goes to show and just, like, captures that this field is so new and we're still figuring it out. And just seeing, like, our impact in healthcare and just, like, how we can get involved. And that, you know, going back to, like, disparities in genetics, kind of switching it to the student side of some, you know, places, there's a lot of internships available in major cities. But if you are in a program that isn't in a major city, having telehealth options for rotations is amazing because then you can have so much more opportunities and meet with people from all over the country that you're not just meeting with people in a certain city, but you get to experience so much patient diversity there. So it's so great that you're able to take on that many students and just have them have that experience. We have a lot of people that listen that are wanting to be genetic counselors. And part of that, they're trying to figure out, okay, how do I get into grad school? How can I get experience beforehand? Do you also have interns that aren't in a genetic counseling program or, like, outside of that?
So we are very excited to have our two first business interns this year in 2021, and they have been the most amazing and just positive addition to ATGC's meetings. They're always there with great ideas and feedback, and they've been working on a project that we've been super excited about since last year, and that is we are launching some nonprofit initiatives to help support and give back to the larger community. So there'll be a little bit more to come on that in the next few weeks from ATGC. But I just do want to give a quick shout out to them because, I mean, they have just been such a joy to work with. You know, it's always fun to have more brains considering more options and, you know, sort of working through this together because coming from a clinical background and, you know, growing this practice that we have together has been just a really big part of ATGC. And I feel very, very lucky to have the team that we have and just can't wait to see what the future holds.
Yeah, that is so exciting to be able to see the company grow. And oh, we could do a whole episode just on, like, how to start a practice and, like, how to, you know, take genetic counseling skills and also have a business with that. But it's just exciting to hear that, you know, ATGC is growing and that, you know, even, like, your social media presence, I've really noticed, have really ramped up in the last few months. So it's just exciting to see everything growing. Where can people find you on social media and the website if they want to learn more?
Yeah, absolutely. Our website is at-gc.com. From there, you can link to our social media accounts. You can also probably search Advanced Telegenetic Counseling or ATGC on all major social media platforms. So maybe we can give a little bit more information about that, like in the link or something, so that people can connect.
Yeah, definitely. All of the information from this episode is going to be at dnapodcast.com. And we also have the show notes. So if you're listening to this in a podcast app, you can certainly swipe and see all of those show notes for the links there. And if people want to connect with us on social media, you can search DNA Today on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook to connect with us. And, you know, as I mentioned, all of the episodes in 2020 are available on YouTube, and most of them now have a video aspect. So you can actually see me and the guest. So for this episode, if you haven't checked it out, you can go to YouTube and see Elizabeth and I, you know, talking about all these topics. And if people have any questions for me or Elizabeth, you can email them in info@dnapodcast.com. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for coming on the show and diving into telehealth. I mean, this is kind of the new normal for genetic counselors, but at the same time, we're still figuring it out, and you've figured it out many years ago. So thanks for coming on and just sharing all your insight with us.
Well, we're definitely all figuring it out together, because this is a whole new world. I so much appreciate you having me on today. It's always a pleasure speaking with you, Kira, and I look forward to the next time we can connect together.
Definitely. And another shout out for the Phenotip speaker series we did back at the beginning of the pandemic. You can find that at phenotips.com. And there's a tab on there, the stories tab, and then you can look at all of those webinars. So thanks again, Elizabeth. Before wrapping up the show, I want to remind you about the Greenwood Genetic Center's genetic counseling aids, known as the Greenwood Flipbook by Genetic Counselors. Greenwood has created visual aids for 36 years and naturally has become the gold standard for patient education and student instruction. Greenwood Genetic Center's genetic counseling aids are designed specifically for counselors, physicians, educators, and other genetic healthcare professionals. Not only is it great to use with patients, it can also be helpful with students. As a prenatal genetic counselor, I use visual aids in every session to help patients understand topics like how non-invasive prenatal screening works or the chance for a couple to pass on a condition to their child. Since most of my appointments are in person, I find it's even more vital with masks as a barrier, and it keeps people engaged with the session. What's new to the Greenwood 7th edition visual aids, you ask? Newer topics like epigenetics, pharmacogenomics, and whole genome sequencing. Greenwood visual aids are also now available in a print, digital download, and through the iOS App Store. And here's a bonus. The app allows you to draw directly on visual aids and customize your slides. Take advantage of this opportunity and visit ggc.org/publications. Again, that's ggc.org/publications to receive your own visual aids. I want to remind you about Keck Graduate Institute's master's program in genomic data analytics. KGI is an innovative grad school that is a member of the Claremont Colleges in Southern California. Their name might sound familiar if you listen to the genetic counseling application episodes with Brenna, who's one of my friends that's a student there. In addition to genetic counseling, KGI also offers this master's degree in genomic data analytics. Students benefit from foundational coursework in human genetics, cutting-edge courses in the applied life sciences, and an innovative human genomics curriculum that combines to prepare for the exciting field of genomic data analytics. Upon completion of the program, students will be able to utilize their foundation in genetics and genomics, along with a practical knowledge of data analytics, to be able to translate patient sequencing data into actionable clinical recommendations, and also be able to bridge the gap between research scientists and clinical practitioners. Graduates of the program will gain the ability to translate research into precision medicine. Learn more about KGI's genomic data analytics program by visiting kgi.edu/dnatoday. Again, that's kgi.edu/dnatoday.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.